while giving birth to the twins, later the second and Ganema. Even now, the pain of losing Chaney seemed far greater than the pain he presently suffered. If he died now, in her arms, he would inflict that same anguish upon her. He remembered wandering off into the desert, blinded from prescience, and surviving, becoming the preacher, dying in a dusty street surrounded by a mob. He was now everything he had once been. Paul Atreides, and all the different guises he had worn, every mask of legend, every power and weakness. Most important of all, he now had the abilities of a reverend mother, the infinitesimal physical control. Like a beacon in the darkness, his mother had enabled him to see. Between his last heartbeats, he searched within himself in the deep and drowning place. He found the knife wound inside his heart, saw the mortal damage, and discovered that his body's defenses were incapable of repairing the grievous injuries on their own. He needed to direct the healing process. Although in the preceding moments he had seemed to be fading, he now sharpened himself and became part of his own heart, which was no longer beating. He saw where Paolo's blade had slashed open his right ventricle, letting blood spill out of the chamber. His aorta had been nicked, but there was no more blood for it to carry. Paul brought the cells together and sealed them. Then, droplet by droplet, he began to draw his own blood back from the cavities of his body where it had spilled and reabsorbed it into his tissues. He literally pulled life back into himself. Paul didn't know how long his trance lasted. It seemed as infinite as the death coma caused by touching just a drop of the poisonous water of life to his tongue. He became suddenly aware of Chaney's grip again. Her hand was warm, and he felt his own flesh, no longer cold and shuddering. "Usel!" He could hear Chaney's faint whisper and detected the disbelief in her tone. "Jessica, something's changed. He is doing what he needs to do." When he finally summoned the strength to flutter his eyelids, Paul Muad'Dib Atreides rejoined the living, bringing with him both his old life and his new. In addition to those memories and abilities, he returned with a fantastic, even greater revelation. Just then, a flushed and bloody Duncan Idaho burst into the great cathedral hall, knocking sentinel robots aside. Erasmus casually gestured to allow the man to enter. Duncan's eyes went wide when he saw the bleeding Paul propped up by his mother and Chaney. Dr. Yui looked astonished at the miracle before him. Duncan ran toward them. Trying to pull together his thoughts, Paul placed the tableau around him in the context of his internal knowledge. He had learned much by dying the first time, coming back as a Gola and nearly dying again. He had always had a phenomenal gift for prescience. Now he knew even more. In spite of his miraculous survival and rebirth, he still was not the perfect Kwisatz Haderach, and clearly Paolo was not either. As Paul's vision cleared, he focused on a realization that none of them had seen. Not Omnius, Erasmus, Shiana, nor any of the Golas. "Duncan," he said in a hoarse voice. "Duncan, it's you." After hesitating for a moment, his old friend came closer, this loyal Atreides fighter who had been through the Gola process more times than any other individual in history. You're the one they've been looking for, Duncan. It's you. Even prescience has its limits. No one will ever know all the things that might have been. Reverend Mother Darwy O'Dread. With her arm around his shoulders, Chaney rocked Paul as she shuddered with joy and relief. Fremen prohibitions were so much a part of her that even after seeing his mortal wound and watching him come within a heartbeat of dying in her arms, she still had not shed a tear. In the machine cathedral, Duncan wrestled with the revelation that the pale and bloodied Paul had given him. I am the Kwisatz Haderach. Paul nodded weakly. The final one. The perfect one. The one they were looking for. The old man manifestation of Omnius gave the robed form of the independent robot an accusing look. If this claim is correct, you were in error, Erasmus. You did not allow for the humans to twist fate yet again. You said your predictive calculations were accurate. The robot remained aloof, even smug. Only your interpretation of my calculations was flawed. The final Kwisatz Haderach was indeed aboard the no-ship, as I said all along. You drew the obvious conclusion that the one we sought must be Paul Atreides. When the face dancer found the bloody knife carrying the cells of Muad'Dib, you falsely reinforced your own conclusion. Duncan's mind wanted to reject what he was hearing. Even if he truly was the ultimate Kwisatz Haderach, what was he to do with the knowledge? The old man sneered down at the frozen, useless boy Paolo and the dead Baron. All that work on our own clone gave us no advantage. Extremely wasteful. Erasmus shaped his flow metal face into a sympathetic expression and addressed the recent arrival. I knew I was drawn to you for a reason, Duncan Idaho. If you really are the Kwisatz Haderach, you stand in a position to alter the course of the universe. You are a living watershed, the harbinger of change. You can choose to stop this conflict that has made enemies of humans and thinking machines for thousands of years. Duncan realized that Yui, Jessica, Chaney, and Paul had all played their parts, and now the focus had shifted to him. Erasmus stepped closer to them. Kralizek means the end of many things, but that end need not be destructive. Just a fundamental change. Henceforth, nothing will be the same. Not destructive. Jessica raised her voice. You said your thinking machine ships are attacking worlds in the old empire. You've already sterilized and conquered hundreds of planets. The robot seemed unperturbed. I did not say our approach was the only way or even the best one. The old man glowered at Erasmus as if he had been insulted. Suddenly, the sky above the great machine city was torn by multiple booms of displaced air as 1,000 guild highliners appeared like storm clouds. Emerging from fold space, the fleet of huge vessels easily carried enough weaponry to level the continent. Omnius's old man guise flickered as his concentration was wrenched by the dramatic shift. Across the city of Synchrony, robots buzzed about, fighting the sandworms that continued to rampage. Now they had to shore up defenses against the new enemy overhead. Inside the vaulted building, Erasmus altered his form again to the kindly old woman, as if he believed this presentation more convincing and compassionate. I've run probabilities beyond the limits of my original calculations. I believe you have the power, Duncan Idaho. Stop these guild ships from destroying us. Oh, please stop prattling, Omnius said. Duncan looked around, crossed his arms over his chest. I am not afraid of the guild and their navigators. If I have to die to end this, I'm willing to do so. Yui added bravely, everyone here has died before. It doesn't matter. Let them destroy Synchrony. The old man did not seem overly disturbed. I am dispersed across many locations, annihilating this entire planet. This node will never eradicate me. I am the Evermind, and I am everywhere. A crack sounded at the center of the wide cathedral hall. Then, with a blur and a bang of folded space, an image appeared above the blood-stained floor. The shimmering transmission appeared to be solid one moment and a staticky ghost the next. In moments, the shape clarified to a beautiful and statuesque human woman with classically perfect features. Then she shifted to become stunted and dwarfish, with a blunt, unattractive face, short arms and legs, and an overly large head. After another flicker, the image was nothing more than a disembodied face that wavered in the air. It was as if she could not remember exactly what she was supposed to look like. Duncan immediately knew who or what this was. The Oracle of Time. The face swiveled to scan the people and robots in the great hall before the image hovered closer to him. Duncan Idaho, I have found you. I searched for years, but your no-ship and your own strangeness protected you. Duncan no longer questioned the bizarre storm of occurrences around him. Why did you come now? You emerged from your no-ship only once before on the planet Kelso, but I did not follow you swiftly enough. I sensed you again when your no-ship was damaged and captured. Now, with the thinking machines attacking, I was able to trace the lines of the Evermind's tachyon web and follow Omnius to you. I brought my navigators with me. What is this apparition? The Evermind demanded. I am Omnius. Begone from my world. Once I was called Norma Senva. Now I am exponentially more than that. Far beyond anything a computer network can comprehend. I am the Oracle of Time, and I go where I please. In the old crone guise, Erasmus reached out like a curious child and touched, but the wrinkled hand passed through her image. So many of the most interesting humans are women, he mused. The robot experimentally waved fingers through her ghostly likeness, stirring without altering it. She ignored him. Duncan Idaho, you have finally come to your realization. Kwisatz Haderach, I tried to protect you. Before you, Paul Muad'Dib and his son Leto, the god emperor, were imperfect prophets. Even they realized their flaws. Now, through a confluence in the cosmos, the nexus of all nexuses, you have become the singularity in a bold new universe, the vital point from which everything flows outward for the rest of eternity. The hopes of humankind, and much more, are distilled in you. Still taken aback, Duncan asked, But how? I don't feel that different. The Kwisatz Haderach is a shortening of the way, a figure powerful enough to force a fundamental and necessary change that alters the course of future history, not just for humanity, but for thinking machines as well. Yes, you have the power, Duncan Idaho. Erasmus sounded just as encouraging as the Oracle. I rely on you to make the correct choice. You know what will benefit the universe most, and you know that thinking machines can enrich the entirety of civilization. Duncan marveled at the awareness of his new identity and the unfolding of his thoughts around the astounding truth. Finally, after so many attempts at life in Gola form, he knew his destiny. His mind was fully awakened. He saw time as a great ocean stretching across the cosmos, and with his awakening powers, he envisioned being able to analyze each molecule, each atom and subatomic particle. Perfect prescience would come, but not yet. Not too fast, or it would induce the same crippling paralysis that had befallen Paolo. Already Duncan's mind could go much faster than Amentat's, and he sensed he could make his body move at speeds that would have astonished even the Bashar. I am the ultimate Kwisatz Haderach. There will be no more after me. The Oracle's image flickered, shifting her shape back to that of the beautiful woman. After you died the first time, Duncan Idaho. As a soldier fighting to save the Atreides, fighting to save the first Kwisatz Haderach, the powers of the universe compelled your resurrection as a Gola, and many times afterward, over and over. The original God Emperor understood some of your destiny, and played an unwitting role in bringing about this moment. The end point of his golden path is the beginning of something else. I am linked to the Golden Path? You are, but you are destined to go far beyond it. Paul seemed to be swiftly recovering his strength. Beside him, Jessica said to the otherworldly visitor, "But Duncan was part of no formal breeding program. How did he develop into a Kwisatz Haderach?" The Oracle continued, "Duncan, with each rebirth, you came closer to completion. Instead of being developed in a breeding program, you went through a process of personal evolution. With every successive incarnation, you acquired more knowledge, skills, and experience. As if a sculptor with a tiny chisel was chipping away at a large block of hard stone, slowly, ever so slowly, fashioning a perfect statue. In your one body, you manifested a tachyon evolution, a hyper-fast developmental journey that propelled you toward your destiny." Duncan had lived his life repeatedly for thousands of years. Not only had the Tliloxu tinkered with his genetics to give him abilities to fight the honored Matres, they had combined his cells so that he retained all of his previous lives, every one of them. With all those memories, he possessed a breadth of experience and wisdom that no one could match. This Duncan Idaho had more knowledge than the most advanced Mentat or the Evermind Omnius, and more understanding of human nature than even the great tyrant Leto II. Duncan was the same person again and again, perfecting himself, constantly filtering out impurities, like passing through a fine mesh strainer to sift out only the best of qualities, leaving him as the One. He allowed himself a secret smile at the irony. He had succeeded only because of the meddling of the Tliloxu, though he was certain that the Masters had never intended to create a savior for humanity. Duncan's Mentat mind burned through the data, confirming his conclusion, knowing that the Oracle of Time must be correct. Truly, I am the Kwisatz Haderach. He wished Miles Tegg could have been there with him. And what of the Great War? Kralizek? We are in the midst of it now. Kralizek is not merely a war, but a point of change. Her image flickered. And you are the culmination of it. But what about the rest of humanity? Mirbella? They need to know. How will they understand what has happened? My navigators will inform them, perhaps even bring their leaders here. First, however, I need to eliminate a threat that should have been gone millennia ago. An enemy I fought 10,000 years before you were first born. The Oracle slid through the air toward the indignant-looking old man, Omnius. Facing him, she made her voice boom more loudly than the Evermind's speakers ever had. I must ensure that the thinking machines can no longer harm anyone. That was my mission ages ago, when I was merely a woman, when I invented the concept of the Fold Space Engine, when I discovered the mind-expanding powers of Melange. I shall remove you, Omnius. The Evermind laughed, a remote old man's chuckle. The slightly stooped manifestation suddenly grew larger, looming like a giant over her image. You cannot remove me, for I am not a corporeal being. I am information. So my existence has spread anywhere the tachyon net stretches. I am everywhere. The female image formed a smile. And I am more than that. I am the Oracle of Time. Now hear my laughter. In an eerie voice, Norma Senva chuckled long and hard, causing even the oversized Omnius to take a step backward. I am heard across star systems and eons, across time and space, far beyond the range of your net. Omnius took another step backward. First, I crippled your fleet. Now I will rip you out like the weed that you are and discard you. Impossible. The old man began to dissolve as he retreated into his own network. I will extract you. Every shred of information from every node. Her misty image became amorphous and seeped around Omnius. He nearly staggered into Erasmus, but the independent robot easily slid out of the way, his old woman face expressing curiosity and bemusement. I will take you to a place where such information is no longer comprehensible, where physical laws do not apply. Duncan heard the Evermind's voice cry out in rage, but it was muffled. In the vaulted hall, the insectile sentinel robots who tried to move forward in the service of Omnius seemed strangely disoriented and sluggish. There are many universes, Omnius. Duncan Idaho has visited more than one, and he knows the place of which I speak. I rescued him and his no-ship from it long ago. You, however, will never find your way back. Duncan considered the incomprehensible struggle before him. Indeed, when he had first stolen the no-ship from Chapter House, he had lurched through the fabric of space in a desperate attempt to avoid capture and had taken them to a bizarrely skewed universe. He shuddered to think of it. Nothing shall rescue you, Omnius. Impossible, the old man bellowed, losing his physical form and becoming no more than a spangled outline. Yes, impossible. Wonderfully so. The air in the chamber crackled with clouds of electricity that spread thinner and thinner as the Oracle wrapped herself like a net around the iconic thinking machine. For an instant, Duncan saw Norma's face superimposed over that of the old man. The two countenances merged into one, hers. The beautiful woman smiled, and the air filled with sparkling, hair-fine strands of electricity that she drew around her like an elegant cloak. Then she uprooted herself from reality and vanished into the incomprehensible void, taking with her all traces of Omnius. Forever. You see enemies everywhere, but I see only obstacles. And I know what to do with obstacles. Either move them or crush them so that we can be on our way. Mother Commander Mirbella, address to the Combined Sisterhood. Even after the Navigators destroyed the bulk of the enemy fleet in a flurry of unexpected obliterators, a second wave of machine ships advanced toward Chapter House. The Oracle, upon locating Duncan Idaho and the lost no-ship, had promptly taken most of her highliners to Synchrony, only assigning a small percentage to aid in the defenses of other human-inhabited planets. With the outcome of those missions unknown, some or all of the other planets could still be vulnerable. One thing was certain. At Chapter House, Mirbella and her defenders faced the remaining machine ships alone. Through it all, the Mother Commander didn't have much time to process her shock at discovering that Duncan was still alive. Administrator Goris groaned.
Will they never stop?
No. Mirbella scowled at him for forcing her to state the obvious. They are thinking machines. High over the Bene Gesserit world, her 100 last-stand vessels hung surrounded by the debris from thousands of destroyed machine battleships. This fight had inflicted a substantial toll on the enemy, but unfortunately, it was not enough. The new wave of Omnius vessels would not thumb their noses at the human defenders as the first had. Mirbella expected no mercy this time and didn't have much hope for the last-stand ships at other strategic points either. The machines intended to annihilate Chapter House and every other world that stood in their way. She cursed the clumsy, uncooperative guild vessels that the Junction shipyards had produced and the worthless weapons the Ixians had supplied. She had to think of something on her own. I won't just let our ships sit here with their throats bared, like lambs waiting for slaughter. The mathematical compilers controlled our fold space guidance and standard. She shouted at Goris. Rip out those damned navigation devices. We'll maneuver our vessels by hand. But we will not know where we are going. We could crash. Then we must crash into the enemy instead of each other. She wondered if the machines would feel a need for vengeance when they saw the wreckage of the first wave. Honored Matres certainly would. The enemy kept coming. Mirbella studied the complex tactical projections. Surely they did not need such a vast number of vessels to conquer the minimally inhabited Chapter House. It seemed obvious that the Evermind had learned the value of intimidation and showmanship, as well as the wisdom of redundancy. In the Highliner Control Center, two guildsmen argued with Goris. One claimed that disconnecting the mathematical compiler was impossible, while the other warned that it was unwise. Mirbella ended the debate with the compelling power of Bene Gesserit voice. The guildsmen shuddered and, unable to resist her, did as she commanded. Although the machine forces outgunned them by a substantial margin, Mirbella did not flinch from what had to be done. Instead, she allowed herself to reawaken her old honored Matre anger. This was not a time to calculate odds. It was a time to unleash every bit of destruction her people could muster. Their chances were better now than they had been when this last stand began. If they all embraced viciousness and fought like frenzied honored Matres, they could inflict significant damage. They might still go down in flames, but if they bought sufficient time for the Oracle and her navigators to defeat Omnius, Mirbella would count it a victory. She just wished she could have seen Duncan one more time. Mirbella turned toward the broad projection plate that magnified the oncoming vessels. Arm all weaponry and stand ready to ram. The moment we deplete conventional armaments, our own ships will become the final weapons. 100 of us will take out at least as many of their ships. Up to this point, Goris had called her battle strategy suicidal. Now, he looked as if he might try something foolish to stop her. Why not negotiate with them? Would it not be preferable to surrender? We cannot stop them from destroying their targets. Mirbella fixed her gaze on the administrator as if he were weak prey. Even the sisters who had started out as pure Bene Gesserits now reacted with a feral, honored Matre strength. They would never back down. And you base this suggestion on the success of your emissaries to the thinking machines? All those emissaries who disappeared? Mirbella's voice sizzled like hot acid. Administrator, if you'd like to seek another solution, I would be happy to eject you from an airlock and let you fly across the empty vacuum. As the last breath explodes out of your lungs, maybe you can gasp out your personal surrender terms. Be my guest, if you believe the thinking machines will listen to you. The desperate-looking guildsman cringed. Around him, the sisters moved to take control, ready for a final plunge. Before Mirbella could give the command, though, Jeunesse broke in over their tight-linked channel. Mother Commander, something's changed with the machine battleships. Look at them. Mirbella examined the images on the viewing plate. The enemy vessels no longer moved in a tight, efficient formation. They slowed and began to spread apart, as if they had no goal, like unmanned sailing ships becalmed on a vast cosmic sea, left suddenly leaderless. To her amazement, the thinking machine fleet floated listlessly in space. Even when caught up in his own myth, Muad'Dib pointed out that greatness is only a transitory experience. For a true Kwisatz Haderach, there are no warnings against hubris, no rules or requirements to follow. He takes from all things and gives to all things as he wishes. How could we have deluded ourselves into believing we could control such a one? Bene Gesserit Analysis. After the oracle vanished, Erasmus stared at the empty space in the center of the vaulted chamber, his head slightly cocked to one side. Omnius is gone. His voice sounded hollow to Duncan Idaho's ears. No vestige of the Evermind remains in the network of thinking machines. Duncan felt his own mind racing, expanding, absorbing new information. The terrible enemy he had sensed for so long, the threat that the honored Matres had provoked, was no more. By removing the Evermind, uprooting it from this universe and taking it elsewhere, the Oracle had disabled the vast thinking machine fleet, leaving it without its controlling force. And we still remain. Duncan didn't know exactly what had changed inside him. Was it simply the knowledge of his raison d'être? Had he always had access to this potential without realizing it? Assuming Paul was correct, something had lain dormant inside Duncan for all those years, through all of the lives, original and Gola, a latent power that had grown with each iteration of his existence. Now, like a massive genetic program, he had to figure out how to activate it. Paul and his son, Leto II, had the blessing and curse of prescience. With their memories restored, each could claim to be a Kwisatz Haderach. Miles Teg had possessed his phenomenal capacity to move at a speed beyond comprehension and might conceivably have become a Kwisatz Haderach himself. The navigators in the clustered highliners overhead could use their minds to see through folds of space and find safe paths for the great ships to travel. The Bene Gesserits could control their bodies, down to their very cells. All had expanded on traditional human abilities, expressing humankind's potential to exceed expectations. As the ultimate and final Kwisatz Haderach, Duncan believed he might have the capability to do all of those things and much more, reaching the highest pinnacle of humanity. Thinking machines had never understood human potential, even though their mathematical projection credited the Kwisatz Haderach with the power to end Kralizek and change the universe. Confidence infused him, and he thought he might discover a way to make grand, epic changes, but not under the control of the thinking machines. Instead, Duncan would find his own way. He would be a real Kwisatz Haderach, independent as well as all-powerful. Dispassionately, he gazed upon the old woman in her frumpy floral print dress and gardening apron, complete with scuffs of dirt. Her face appeared careworn, as if from nurturing people her entire life. Something of Omnius has vanished from me, but not all. Finally, forsaking the old woman disguise, Erasmus resumed the liquid metal form of the independent robot, attired in an elegant crimson and gold robe. I can learn much from you, Duncan Idaho. As the new God Messiah of humankind, you are the optimal specimen for me to study. I am not another specimen for your laboratory analysis. Too many others had treated him that way in too many of his past lives. A mere slip of my tongue. The robot smiled cheerily, as if attempting to veil his looming violence. I have long desired a perfect understanding of what it means to be human. Now it seems you have all the answers I so assiduously sought. I recognize the myth in which I live. Duncan recalled Paul Atreides making similar pronouncements. Paul had felt trapped by his own mythos, which had become a force beyond his control. Duncan, however, had no fear of the forces that would emerge, either for or against him. With penetrating vision, he saw through and around Erasmus and his minions. Across the hall, he watched Paul Atreides standing unsteadily, aided by Chaney and Jessica after his terrible ordeal. Paul drank from a water flagon, which he had taken from a table near the Baron's body. Outside, the crashing of sandworms against robotic defenders had begun to subside. Though the huge creatures had not destroyed the machine cathedral, they had caused extensive damage to the city of Synchrony. At the perimeter of the great chamber, Quicksilver robots stood attentively, the charges in their integral weapons glowing in a display of readiness. Even without the Evermind, Erasmus could direct these machines to fire a deadly barrage against the humans in the vaulted room. The independent robot could attempt to kill every mortal here in a show of petulant revenge. And perhaps he would make the effort. Neither you nor your robots can make any difference here, Duncan warned. All of you are far too slow. Either you are overconfident, or you are fully aware of what you can do. The flow metal smile tightened just a little, and the bright optic threads glistened a bit more. Perhaps it is the latter, and perhaps not. Somehow Duncan knew with absolute certainty that Erasmus meant to unleash all the destructive power under his control, wreaking whatever havoc he could. Before the robot made half a turn, Duncan was upon him with all the speed Miles Tegg had shown, knocking him backward. Erasmus crashed to the floor, his weapons disabled. Was it just a test? Another experiment? Duncan's heart pounded and his body radiated heat as he stood over the robot, but he felt exhilarated, not exhausted. He could keep fighting like this against any machines Erasmus chose to send against him. At that thought, he left the independent robot where he had fallen, dashed at hyperspeed around the circle, and battered the silvery sentinel robots with quick kicks and punches until they shattered into debris. It was so easy for him now. Before the metal pieces had finished falling to the floor, he was back, looming over Erasmus. "I sensed your doubts as well as your intentions," Duncan said. "Admit it. Even as a thinking machine, you wanted more proof, didn't you?" Lying on his back and looking upward through the hole in the dome at the thousands of huge guild highliners in the sky, Erasmus said, "Assuming you are the long-awaited Superman, why don't you simply destroy me? With Omnius gone, removing me would assure the victory of humanity." If the solution were that simple, a Kwisatz Haderach would not be needed to implement it. Duncan surprised Erasmus and himself by reaching down and helping the robot to his feet. To end Kralizek and truly change the future requires more than just the annihilation of one side or the other. Erasmus examined his body core and his robes to ensure his appearance, then looked up with a broad smile. "I think we just might have a meeting of the minds, something I never really achieved with Omnius." When the time comes for our great unmasking, our foes will be surprised by what has been disguised in front of them since the very beginning. Crone, communique to face dancers. Now that the Oracle was gone, several of the Navigator's giant highliners overhead folded space and disappeared from synchrony without explanations or farewells. Throughout the city, sandworms continued to destroy the living metal buildings. Because Omnius had never allowed them autonomy, the robotic defenders were unable to function effectively without connecting to the Evermind. The vaulted hall filled with resounding silence. Then, with a loud crash, the high doors swung open. Dressed in black and followed by a throng of face dancers, Crone marched in from the bright machine streets. Identical, blank-faced drones swarmed into the room. Cytale's poison gas had killed some of the shapeshifters, but many had avoided the battle entirely. Out in the sprawling machine city, countless face dancers had pretended to stand against the rampaging sandworms, but secretly melted away from the barricades the robotic soldiers had set up. Krone had taken pleasure in watching the worms destroy the great flow metal buildings, smashing thousands of thinking machines, clearing the way, making our job easier. Krone offered a skeletal smile as he swept forward. I never cease to be entertained by the erroneous deductions of those who think they control us. In his mind, a face dancer victory was now assured. Explain yourself, Krone. Erasmus seemed only mildly curious. Ignoring the humans and their dead, Krone faced the independent robot, who stood by Duncan Idaho. This war has been in process for 5,000 years. It was never Omnius's idea anyway. Oh, our war has been building for far longer than that, Erasmus pointed out. We escaped after the Battle of Corin 15,000 years ago. I'm referring to a completely different war, Erasmus. One you never realized was taking place. From the moment the first advanced face dancers were dispatched by our creator, Hidar Phenagetica, we began our manipulations. When we encountered your thinking machine empire, we allowed you to create more and more of us. Yet the moment Omnius let us in, the face dancers became his true masters. We shared with you all the lives we had gathered, letting you believe you were becoming increasingly superior to us and to humans. But we face dancers were in control all along. There is a diagnosis for your mental condition, Dr. Yui said boldly. You have delusions of grandeur. Krone's lips peeled back from blunt, perfect teeth. My statements, based as they are on accurate information, can hardly be called delusions. The amused expression on Erasmus's face did not change. Krone found it maddening, so he raised his voice. You thinking machines helped us implement our face dancer plans, all the while believing that we served you. But it was exactly the opposite. You were, in fact, our tools. All machines began as tools, Duncan pointed out, looking from Erasmus to the face dancer leader. Krone was not impressed. So this was the man who had revealed himself as the final Kwisatz Haderach. Nor could he understand why the independent robot was not more upset, since he prided himself on employing his artificial emotions. Krone continued. Under your guidance, Erasmus, biological facilities run by thinking machines manufactured millions of enhanced face dancers. At first, we ventured into human society as scouts, swiftly infiltrating the fringes of the scattering, and then the old empire. We easily duped the lost Tliloxu into believing we were their allies. Wherever humans remained, face dancers quietly intruded. We lived long and accomplished much. Exactly as we instructed you to do, Erasmus said, sounding bored with the lecture. Exactly as we wished to do, Krone snapped back. Face dancers are everywhere, a hive mind more advanced than any extrasensory human linkages, more powerful than the network of Omnius. So swiftly and easily we accomplished our aims. And our aims as well, Erasmus said. Galled by the robot's stubborn refusal to recognize defeat, Krohn felt rage building within him. Over the centuries, we prepared for the day when we would implement our plan and eliminate Omnius. We never guessed that the Oracle of Time would do it for us. He chuckled softly. Your empire has fallen. We have superseded all thinking machines. And now that Omnius's fleet and plagues have brought humanity to its knees, we can activate our hidden face dancer cells everywhere, simultaneously. We will take control. He planted his fists on his hips. It is already over for machines and for humans. Behind him, all the identical face dancers wore blank expressions. Krohn's featureless face had been duplicated many times over. An interesting and insidious plan, Erasmus said. Under other circumstances, I might applaud you for your ingenuity and duplicity. Even if you could rally your robots to kill those of us on Synchrony, it would be of no use. I am reproduced everywhere. The face dancer scoffed. Omnius thought he was seeding the universe for his own conquest, but the true seeds of his downfall were right under his mechanical nose. Erasmus began to laugh. It started as a chuckle that he imitated from an ages-old dataset, and he added components sifted from other recordings. The resultant sounds were quite enjoyable to himself, and he was sure they were convincing to the others. Over his long, long lifetime, the unusual robot had expended a great deal of effort in studying humans and their emotions. Laughter particularly intrigued him. An early step, which had required centuries of deep thought, had been to understand the concept of humor, to learn what circumstances might elicit this strange, noisy response from a human. In the process, he had compiled a library of his favorite laughter samples, a delightful repertoire. He played them all now through his mouth speakers, much to the bewilderment of the face dancer Krohn. But Erasmus realized that not even these favorite chuckles, snickers, and guffaws were adequate to express the true hilarity that he currently felt. "What is so funny?" Krohn demanded. "Why are you laughing?" I am laughing because even you don't understand the trick that was played on you. Erasmus chuckled again, and this time he created a unique sound that contained flavors and undertones of his best borrowed recordings. This was truly his individual sense of humor, something genuinely original. After such long and difficult study, Erasmus was pleased with the new comprehension he had achieved. Surely this was worth all the tribulations of Kralizek. The independent robot turned to Duncan Idaho, who, after listening to the betrayals upon betrayals, had the faraway look of a man trying to join mismatched puzzle pieces. Erasmus knew that Duncan hadn't the faintest idea of how to achieve his full potential. Just like so many other humans, the robot would have to guide this one. Ignoring Krohn, he spoke to Duncan. I am laughing because the inherent differences between humans and face dancers are painfully hilarious. I hold great fondness for your species, as more than specimens, more than pets. You have never ceased to astonish me. In defiance of my most careful predictions, you still manage to do the unexpected. Even when those actions work to the detriment of thinking machines, I can appreciate them for their uniqueness. Crone and his contingent of face dancers closed in, as if expecting to mop up these few robots and humans easily. Your words and laughter are meaningless. Jessica supported a still weak Paul while Cheney picked up the bloody dagger that Paolo and Dr. Yui had both used. Now that she had her past memories, Cheney held the weapon in the manner of a true Fremen woman, ready to defend her man. Erasmus smiled to himself. His own confrontation with Duncan had shown only the tip of the iceberg of the Kwisatz Haderach's powers. The robot had found it terribly exciting for a few moments, placing himself at the brink of death, or at least its equivalent for a machine. The face dancers would be in for quite a surprise if they thought Duncan, Idaho, and these other humans would be an easy conquest. But Erasmus had an even greater surprise to spring. What I mean, my dear Crone, is that while humans can astonish me, face dancers are woefully predictable. It's a shame. I had hoped for something more original in your case. When Crone scowled, every one of the face dancers in the chamber mimicked his expression, like reflections in a hall of mirrors. We've already won, Erasmus. Face dancers control every foothold, and you have no place to hide from us. We will rise up across the human planets and on all machine worlds. We will look back upon the path of destruction, and only we will remain. Not if I choose to stop it. Erasmus's flow metal face shifted into a placid, disappointed expression. Omnius might have been convinced that you all were our meek puppets, but I never believed as much. Who can ever trust a face dancer? Among humans, that saying has become a cliché. You and your counterparts did exactly what I predicted you would do. How could you not? You are what you are. It was practically programmed into you. The robot gave a sad shake of his head. While you face dancers were laying down your schemes, sending out spies, and establishing your presence, I watched patiently. Though you thought you were hidden from Omnius, you weren't clever enough. I saw everything you did and allowed it to happen because I found your petty power plays amusing. Crone adopted a fighting stance, as if ready to attack the robot with bare hands. You know nothing of our activities. Now, who is drawing conclusions from insufficient data? Ever since the end of the Butlerian Jihad, when Omnius and I were sent out here on our long exile to start the machine empire all over again, I was the one in control. I allowed Omnius to continue believing he ruled everything and made all the decisions, but even in his first incarnation, he was a self-aggrandizing annoyance, overconfident and unconscionably stubborn. More so than most humans. The robot swirled his plush robes. The Evermind never learned to adapt and never bothered to face his mistakes. So I refused to let him ruin our chances again. Thus, I took control of the face dancer program from the moment the first of you arrived on our fringe planets. Crone remained defiant, though his voice carried a slightly uncertain undertone. Yes, you manufactured us.
and made us stronger than ever.
I manufactured you, and I wisely planted a fail-safe routine in each and every face dancer. You are biological machines, evolved and manipulated over thousands of years according to my own exacting specifications.
Erasmus moved closer.
A tool should never confuse itself with the hand that wields it. The gathered face dancers seemed to hold the balance of power, and Crone did not back down. His features shifted into a monstrous, demonic mask of fury. Your lies cannot control us any longer. There is no failsafe.
Erasmus emitted a poignant sigh.
Wrong again. This is my proof.
With a precise nod of his burnished head, he triggered the implanted shutdown virus that was genetically buried within each of the customized, enhanced face dancers. Like a toy discarded by a petulant child, the face dancer standing immediately behind Crone crumpled lifeless to the floor, arms and legs akimbo, an expression of momentary shock animating his face before it reverted to its blank state.
Crone stared, unable to comprehend. What are...
And this? Erasmus nodded again. With a swift, sighing thump, the throng of face dancers in the cathedral chamber also dropped, an army scattered in death as if mowed down by projectile fire, leaving Crone alive to accept his utter defeat. Then, after stretching out the moment for effect, the independent robot said,
And this. Your services are no longer required.
With his face twisted in rage and desperation, Crone threw himself toward Erasmus, only to fall to the stone floor, as dead as the rest of his brethren.
Erasmus turned to Duncan Idaho. So, Kwisatz Haderach, as you see, I control fundamental parts of our intriguing game. I would not suggest my powers are as great as your own, but in this particular case, they are quite useful.
Duncan did not show any awe. How far will your shutdown virus spread?
As far as I wish.
Even though the Oracle of Time extracted Omnius from the tachyon net, the strands of that vast interconnected mesh still exist in the fabric of the universe.
Erasmus twitched his head again and sent out a signal.
There. I just dispatched my trigger to every modified face dancer throughout human civilization.
They are dead now. All of them.
They numbered in the tens of millions, you know.
So many,
Jessica exclaimed. Letting out a whistle, Paul said, like a silent jihad.
You would never have known most of them.
With memory imprints, some even believed they were human. All across what remains of your former empire, a great many people are probably quite surprised as comrades, leaders, friends, and spouses drop dead where they stand and transform into face dancers.
Erasmus laughed again. With a single thought, I've eliminated our enemies.
Our common enemy. You see, Duncan Idaho, we need not be at odds.
Duncan shook his head, feeling oddly sickened.
Once again, the thinking machine sees total genocide as a simple solution to a problem.
Now Erasmus was surprised. Don't underestimate the face dancers.
They were evil.
Yes,
That is the correct word. And since each one was fundamentally part of a hive mind, they were all evil. They would have destroyed you, and they would have destroyed us. We've heard that kind of propaganda before, Jessica said. In fact, I've heard it cited as the primary reason why all machines need to be destroyed. Duncan looked at all the dead face dancers, realizing how much damage the shapeshifters had done for centuries, whether they were guided by the Evermind or by their own schemes. Face dancers had killed Garimi, sabotaged the no-ship, and caused the death of Miles Tegg. Looking at the robot, Duncan narrowed his eyes. I can't say I'm terribly sorry, but there was no honor in what you or the face dancers did here. I cannot agree with it. Don't think we are indebted to you. On the contrary, it is I who owe so much to you. Erasmus could barely contain his pleasure. That is exactly the way I'd hoped you would react. After thousands of years of study, I believe I finally understand honor and loyalty. Especially in you, Duncan Idaho, the very embodiment of the concept. Even after an event that obviously helps your race, you still object to my tactics on a moral basis. Oh, how wonderful. He looked down at all the face dancers, the astonished and confused expression on Crone's face. These creatures are the exact opposite, and my fellow machines are not loyal or honorable either. They merely follow instructions because they are programmed to. You have shown me what I needed to know, Kwisatz Haderach. I am very much in your debt. Duncan stepped closer, searching for some way to access the new abilities he knew lay dormant inside him. Just knowing he was the much-anticipated Kwisatz Haderach was not enough. Good. Because now I want something from you. A single decision, a single moment, can make the difference between victory and defeat. Bashar Miles Tegg, Memoirs of an Old Commander. It's a trap. It must be. Mirbella stared at the vast yet motionless enemy fleet. The human ships were still outnumbered hundreds to one, but the thinking machines made no move. The Mother Commander froze, holding her breath. She had expected to be annihilated, but the enemy did nothing. This is deeply unnerving, she whispered. All backup systems ready, as you ordered, Mother Commander, one of the pale young sisters announced. It may be our only chance to cause some damage. We should open fire, Administrator Goris cried. Destroy them while they are helpless. No, said another sister. The machines are trying to lure us from our defensive positions. It's a trick. Everyone on the navigation bridge stared at their dark and quiet foe, afraid to breathe. The robot vessels just drifted out there in the cold void. They have no need to trick or trap us, Mirbella finally said. Look at them. They could destroy us any time.